Hey folks, welcome to the Creation Science Hour. This is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson talking to you live from Pensacola, Florida. Only rained about 2 hours today. This is the rainy season when we get nice rain in the afternoon to cool things down. You ought to come down and see our Dinosaur Adventure Land. We're having so much fun. There are about 100 kids here today from all over the place, learning stuff about creation and the Bible and evolution, how dumb it is, stuff like that. For those just joining us, we are the folks who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate. The evolution theory is the dumbest and most dangerous religion on planet Earth today and in the entire history of planet Earth. This is it, folks. It's the dumbest idea and most dangerous philosophy you could possibly have is to believe in evolution. So, if you want to call in and be on the program, we will take your calls first, and then we take AOL instant message second, and then radio questions that have been sent to us third. And I have a stack about 3/4 inch thick of radio questions to answer. But first, let's see. We stated our position. We believe the Bible's true. God made the world in 6 days. Evolution theory's dumb. We have our Southeast Creation Conference coming up this September. Boy, you've got to sign up now for that. You can go right to the website, click on the button where it says Southeast, or it says Boot Camp, doesn't it, Jonathan?
Yeah, right on drdiner.com. If they scroll down just below the front of the page, they'll see it.
Now, if they do that, does it, they can print out the document to actually sign up on, right?
Yeah, they sure can. And actually, this evening, I was just speaking with Joseph. We should have the online order form set up to where they can actually fill it out online, and that information will come to us.
Registration form?
Yeah.
Adobe Reader 6.0. Okay. Error reading the file, mine says.
Might be because we're inside the network.
We're inside the network.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, it'll work. Try it from outside the network.
Yeah.
Good. Anyway, Southeast Creation Conference, we just had another meeting today going over the details. It's going to be awesome. Dr. Carl Ball will be here. I talked to him about an hour ago. He's excited about coming to speak. He's got probably one of the largest and most effective creation ministries in the world from Glen Rose, Texas, where he lives. He's on TBN every week speaking to 5 million people, and he's one of the experts on the Paluxy River footprints. Actually, at 65 years old, he's an expert on a lot of things. He's quite a great guy and a good personal friend of mine. I'd recommend you come to hear him speak. Also, Dr. Jack Kowazo will be speaking, who wrote the book Buried Alive. I've never met Dr. Kowazo. I've read his book and seen videos of him speaking. He's tremendous. He's one of the world's experts on the so-called cavemen. You need to hear Dr. Kowazo speak. And then we're going to have Dennis Swift, who just got back from his umpteenth trip to Peru. And he is just incredible when it comes to knowledge about dinosaurs living with humans and evidence from Ica, Peru, where they find the stones. We now have 6 in our museum of the stone showing men and dinosaurs together. And you get to come tour our museum while you are here in Pensacola, Florida. Okay, that's coming up soon. Let me read several testimonies here have been sent to us. We get a bunch of these. People get saved and get their friends saved using our videotapes. And by the way, if you want to get our videos, you can go to drdino.com, D-R-D-I-N-O, and order our award-winning video series. We've put out about 1 million videotapes now in 6 languages. And we want to get everybody converted to believe the Bible and to be saved and go into heaven. So use our tapes if you'd like. Here we go. Randy Waterman writes in, I want to thank you for coming to Cahokia, Missouri this last weekend. It was 2 weeks ago now. It took a while to get into the stack here. We are such a small town, so I never expected such a strong Christian leader to come here. I've watched other creation videos before, but yours were the first that I have ever understood. You explain things so that everyone can get it. I'm trying to find out if the college I'm attending will accept the credits from your creation courses, and if they do, I'll be taking them soon. I'm so excited that I'll be able to learn something that is amazing. I read 2 lines there. Learn something that is of God and isn't just some theory that a man came up with. The way God was working through you is amazing. Thank you, and God bless. Well, Randy, thank you so much. I appreciate that. We need some frowny face testimonies here. What happened here? No frowny face so far, Jonathan. You got any in there? You got the pile, right?
I've actually got one, a few frowny face questions and stuff of that nature that we could check out later on after the testimonies.
Okay. Yeah.
Let me go ahead and sift through these.
Yeah, we like the ones who don't like our ministry. We like to read once in a while. It's fun, you know, just to see who your enemies are. We're not trying to make enemies, but we're trying to get them saved. But sometimes you got to get them mad before they get glad. They got to get angry at you, and then God speaks to their heart and realize how dumb their theory is, and they end up getting saved. Okay, Chad writes in, I felt inspired by faith to write this song. This world's gotten hard and oh so cruel. They're trying to take the Ten Commandments out of the schools, but a price will be paid for all the evil deeds. All will ever have to answer every race and every creed. I don't read the whole song here, but this looks good, Chad. I'll have to read that sometime off air. Appreciate that. They hand me a folder cold here. Well, it's not real cold, about 75 degrees, but I read them here. So I'll read the song later. I enjoy poetry. I've written several poems. I'm actually the poet that didn't know it, but my feet show it. They're Longfellows. Here we go. Laura Evans writes in, thank you, thank you, thank you. The words just don't cut it. Your amazing tapes are the way that God used to reach my non-believing husband's heart. He is a Christian. ! About 9 of them here. He wants to be baptized. He is listening to the Bible on CD. Nothing at all could have made me happier. Again, very inadequate. Thank you. Jonathan, that needs to be on the website. That's good. Husband got saved. We see so many people get saved watching the videotapes. Are these all frowny face ones, or?
They're not all frowny face, but they are all basically negative type.
Oh, you got a whole stack of. We get a lot of people that don't like me around here. Okay. Well, let me intersperse them here just for sake of fun. Here's one from Scott Wheeler. I found that your article on death previous to Adam's sin misrepresents, in fact ignored, the traditional arguments mounted in favor of death, sans sin, by long-day creationists, or anyone else for that matter. Personally, I've never seen anyone argue from the death of plants. I'll give you the major traditional argument, and I would appreciate your response. God created animals on the fifth and sixth day, sea and air-dwelling creatures on the fifth, and land-dwelling creatures on the sixth. No one really knows which of these days produced insects, perhaps both days, since some crawl and some fly. Some insects and sea creatures, especially the microscopic kind, have lifespans of less than a day. Many have lifespans of less than an hour, and still many more have lifespans of less than a minute, and some even have lifespans of mere seconds. How could these creatures, which were created previous to Adam's Adamic sin, have survived the full day in order to have lived in Adam's sin? And if God preserved them, did he also halt their rate of reproduction, since if he didn't, the earth would have been overrun with these creatures? Your response would be appreciated. Thank you, Scott Wheeler. Okay, Scott, I don't know if that deserves a frowny face or not. He may really want to know.
Yeah.
Some people, when they ask these type of questions, they don't really want to know. They want to make a point,
mm-hmm.
You know.
It's kind of a slap and run. Yeah, they don't put their phone number on these. I don't know if he did or not.
No, no phone. Yeah, it was a phone number. Okay, sure. Okay, Scott's got a phone number.
Well, that's cool. Maybe he does want to know then.
406, wherever that is. I could look it up on the chart. Okay, Scott, let me give you an answer. I cover this now on videotape number 6, I believe. Let me look that up real quick. Death before sin. Your question, of course, assumes that plants are alive. And I think I can demonstrate to you pretty clearly, Scott, plants are simply not alive in the biblical sense. And if you get my newest video number 6, which is, available, the newest number 6 is not the one that they see when they click on, is it? Is all the newest seminars up there?
Yeah, they are. All the newest MP3s are online.
All the newest MP3s, okay. Aren't plants alive? Here
There's an article on drdiner.com called, it's actually an article that you authored called Are Plants Alive? And people can get on there right now and check out the science section with questions and answers. And read all about this issue of plants being alive or dead. I know Hugh Ross, in your debate with him, tried using the plants argument.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't work.
Well, here's the things to consider. Genesis 1:11 says, God made the herb, the fruit, the grass, etc. on the third day. And this is taken straight from my seminar here, part 6. The new number 6. If you have an old set of tapes, it was probably not even in there. On day 4, he made the sun, moon, and stars. On day 5, he made the living creatures. So here you see on day 3, he made the plants, grass, and herbs. On day 5, it says very clearly, the moving creature that hath life, every living creature that moveth, verse 20 through 23. So it's clear there's a distinction here. The things made on day 5 were alive. The things made on day 3, fruit, grass, plants, and herbs, are not alive in the biblical sense. On day 6, he made more living creatures. It says so in Genesis 1:24. And Genesis 1:29 it says, or verse 30, I'm sorry, and to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat. Well, what does this mean, Scott? To everything wherein there is life, I have given every green herb. Hello, that looks to me like that's teaching very clearly in Genesis 1:30 that the plants are not alive. Genesis 4, verses 3 through 5. And Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering to the Lord, and Abel brought the firstlings of his flock and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect to Abel and to his offering, but unto Cain and his offering he had not respect. Here again, there's no blood in the turnip. Fruit is not alive, you see from Genesis chapter 4. Okay, Genesis 6, verse 17. And God said, I'm going to destroy all flesh wherein is the breath of life under heaven. Every living thing that is in the earth shall die. Noah did not bring plants on the ark in order to replant the world. He brought the animals in order to repopulate the world with living things. Genesis 6, verse 19 through 21. And every living thing of all flesh, two of every sort, shalt thou bring into the ark. He says, the fowls, the cattle, the creeping things. Go see when it lists a bunch of them here. Then it says, and take unto thee of all food that is eaten. Well, now what does that mean? He says, bring all the living things on the ark, and take of all food that is eaten. Again, we see a distinction there. Plants are not alive. Genesis 7:14. The cattle, the beasts, the creeping things, the fowls, the birds, wherein is the breath of life, are going to go into the ark. Genesis 7:22. All in whose nostrils was the breath of life in dry land. So they have to have breath. They have to have blood. We'll see later. Genesis 9, 1 through 4 is a classic one you need to read. Oh, break time. No, I'm hearing noises, Jonathan. We got 1 minute. You sure? Okay. Genesis 9, 1 through 4. Verse number 3. Every moving thing that liveth shall be meat for you, even as the green herb have I given you all things. But the flesh which is the life thereof, which is the blood thereof, you shall not eat. Here again, we have a clear distinction. The moving things that live, it's okay to eat them, just like you used to eat the green herbs. So they're not alive. Leviticus 17:10 talks about the life of the flesh is in the blood in verse 11. It's the blood that makes atonement for your soul. Verse 12, therefore I said unto the children of Israel, no soul of you shall eat blood, neither shall any stranger among you eat blood. Anyway, we'll go on here, but I think I could demonstrate pretty clearly that the plants are actually not alive in the biblical sense. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back. All right, folks, welcome back to the second segment of the Creation Science Hour. You may call in if you'd like and be on the program. 850-479-3466. Go to extension 136. Or you can AOL instant message us here at Dr. Dino Live, and we'll be glad to take your question live here on the air. We're answering the question now sent in to us by Scott Wheeler, who says, in my article, I misrepresented or ignored the idea that plants died before Adam sinned. He kind of assumes in here that Adam sinned on day six. God made him and he sinned, because plants couldn't live one day. Adam might have lived 100 years before he sinned.
Of course, if he was anything like me, he would have probably sinned on day six.
I would have messed it up first day, too, but, no question. Okay. So I'm reading some verses that I cover in my seminar, part six, the newest tape six, which you can get on our website, Dr. Dino Live, about showing that plants are not alive. So the argument that plants died before Adam sinned, of course, assumes plants are alive, and they're not, as I shared from several verses here. Leviticus 17:13, 14, 15, and 16 tells us, the life of the flesh, for it is the life of all flesh, the blood is the life thereof. That's verse number 14. Therefore said I to the children of Israel, ye shall eat no blood, ye shall eat the blood of no manner of flesh, for the life of all flesh is the blood thereof. By the way, all these plants that we eat, we leave the juices in the plant. You'd have to dry everything. If plants are alive and you're considering their sap to be blood, you'd have to dry everything. You couldn't eat an apple or no fresh fruit at all. You'd have to only, even dried though, the blood, still be in it, if that was blood. And then it says in verse 15, and every soul that eateth that which dieth of itself, or that which is torn with beasts, shall bear his iniquity. You're not allowed to eat things if they die of itself. For instance, a cow gets sick and dies in the field, you don't eat it. Well, we wait and eat the plants, the nuts and fruits and stuff after they fall from the tree. That would be if plants and fruits and nuts are alive, that would be a violation of Leviticus 17:15. Okay? Revelation 22, talking about in heaven, in the midst of the street and on either side of the river was there a tree of life which bare 12 manner of fruits. That we're going to eat fruit in heaven. Are you saying there's going to be death in heaven? I don't think so. Jeremiah chapter 8, verse 13, talks about the leaf of the fig tree will fade. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, will fade. Psalm 1:3, his leaf shall not wither. Psalm 37:2, cut down as the grass and wither as the green herb. See, the plants wither, they fade. Isaiah 19:6, the reeds and flags shall wither. Isaiah 19:7, the paper reeds by the brooks shall wither. Isaiah 40, verse 24, and they shall wither. Talking about, again, about plants, okay? All through Scripture, Jeremiah 12:4, Ezekiel 17:9, Ezekiel 17:10, that talks about the plants wither, they fade, they wither. They don't die in the same sense that animals do. I point out that a car can die, and yet it's not alive. I say, oh, my engine died. Well, how can it die when it's not alive? It's an expression, okay? A computer can die. The wind can die down. You can have a dream that dies. So a plant is a complex, self-replicating food source. It has no breath, no blood, no soul. They are not alive. So it is incorrect to say that there was death before Adam sinned. I simply have to politely but firmly disagree. Scott, I think you're wrong there, and that would not be justification for saying the earth is billions of years old. That's for sure. Okay, we're in segment two, Jonathan, and haven't even finished the testimonies yet. I think I'll... Well, some of these are questions. Okay, here we go. Del Gardner writes in, well, Mr. Hovind, if the world is only 6,000 years old, how do you account for this fish? What is this fish on...
The fish is actually, it's exactly like the coelacanth. It's not like the coelacanth, but the situation is the coelacanth is supposed to be over 200 million years old, supposedly disappeared, and then reappeared in 1938. This fish is supposed to be 150 million years old, and even back further than that, they just
and it's still alive.
It. Yeah, it's still alive. So apparently Del Gardner, which is the guy that wrote us the very hateful testimony, which is on our website. You actually spoke with him on the phone.
Oh, it asked us to remove his picture and his contact information. Okay, yeah.
But he apparently thinks that because they're saying this fish is 150 million years old, that the Earth is over 150 million years old.
Well, Dell, if they find a fish that is swimming around in the ocean today, and they tell you this fish is 150 million years old, hello, it's swimming around today. How do you know it's not 2 years old or 1 year old? Why would he believe somebody when they tell him this fish is 150 million years old?
Because it's convenient.
Well, because they found it in a rock layer that's 150 million years old.
Yeah, it also justifies his belief system. His entire paradigm rests on this fish being over 150 million years, or at least over 6,000 to 10,000 years old.
Well, Dale, if you're listening, I'll ask you the question I've asked several evolutionists when they say, you know, they believe in evolution. I say, well, let me ask you this question. If creation were true, if there was a creator and he made the rules, would that change your lifestyle any? Were you there when that one kid at the debate said that?
No. I remember you telling me about it, though. Definitely a unique experience.
Oh, man. And every time I've asked that, and they answer it, but usually they won't answer it, okay, but several times, I've had four or five times, I think, they'll say, well, yeah, that changed my lifestyle a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, okay, now, have you accepted evolution because you have a scientific reason to accept it or because of your lifestyle? And the one kid said, well, it's because I'm horny. That's why I accept evolution. Okay, thank you, son. Appreciate your honesty.
Yeah, at least he's being honest.
Go sit down, please. Okay, let's talk to somebody else. Anyway, so, Dale, think about it. You're sending me a link telling me about a fish that is still alive and saying that's proof for evolution.
And that it has lived for hundreds of millions of years.
Wow.
That just doesn't sound right with evolution. In its present form.
What am I doing wrong, Jonathan? Why can't I get these people to see? Maybe the Bible says God will send them strong delusion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if somebody's deluded by God, I guess nothing I can do.
Hit them harder, I guess.
I shouldn't get frustrated, but I want so badly to win them to the Lord, and I don't know how to reach somebody. I mean, if God's deluded them, or God, Bible says God gave them up, Romans chapter 1. Well, man, if God gives up, I guess I have to also, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I don't know who God's given up on and who he hasn't, so I'm going to assume they're all still reachable. till they die. You know, so as long as they're still breathing, we'll keep going after them. Anyway, Dale, appreciate that. You feel free to call in. We'd love to have you on the program. 850-479-DINO, extension 136. Put you through to our lovely Jonathan, and he will, with a slight sunburn, and he will, oh, not anymore?
Nope.
Heath is the one with sunburn.
Yeah, Heath is sunburn. Heath,
okay. Florida, good place to get a sunburn. Here we go. A-R-I-L-D. How would you pronounce that? A-R-I-L-D. Arild. H, last name, H-O-I-D-A-L, Hoidal. Wow, can't be from my neighborhood. Arild writes in, I'll make it short. The Hovind theory, in the Hovind theory, much is based on an ice-cold meteorite which crashed into Earth. Fragments also hit the moon and then froze the mammoths, which have green leaves in their stomach. First of all, a meteorite which travels through the atmosphere at enormous speed will experience a large amount of friction and will be heated. And when the meteorite hits the Earth, an even larger amount of heat will be produced. The mammoth would certainly not freeze. It would be fried. Well, Arild, I understand your point. However, let me point out to you that it is possible to spray a stream of water right through the middle of a fire and come out the other side. Okay, it is true that some of the water on the edge gets vaporized, but what happens is, in the middle of a scalding hot fire, you end up with a cold stream going through it. If you get enough water going the same direction, it'll just simply, it takes too long to heat it. So I think an ice meteor coming in toward the Earth, fragments of this ice, would make it through, probably pulverized. It would develop its own cold channel. What was that movie, The Day After Tomorrow? Remember that movie?
Yeah, when it just recently came out.
Did you go see it?
We saw it both Saturday night.
That's right. Dumb movie. Okay, I don't recommend it at all. But same idea. They said there's a vortex coming down from the stratosphere, you know, going to be pulling down air that's going to be super cold.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, here you got the same phenomena. It's possible to have super cold air pulled down to the surface of the Earth. So I don't recommend you go see the movie, but maybe this person needs to go see the movie just to get the concept we're talking about. So Arild, if that answers your question, if it doesn't answer your question, call in. Or if it does, call in and say, thank you, Mr. Hovind, for rescuing me from this dumb idea. Let's see. Brad and Julie Moore write in. Regarding telling lies for God, a book that might be of particular interest to you, we have been sharing the information in a particular series of videos with a friend of ours who is a priest. He agreed to watch the videos if we agreed to read a book he recommended. It is aggressively critical of creation science, and we wondered if you have heard of or debated the author. The title is Telling Lies for God, Reason versus Creationism by Ian Plimer, professor of geology at the University of Melbourne.
Yeah, this guy apparently has such a vocal mouth that Answers in Genesis has basically took his entire book, well over 200 pages, and did a point-by-point-by-point rebuttal to every argument that he has in there and just thoroughly destroyed this guy's publication.
Okay.
They can find that on answersingenesis.org.
I have heard of Ian Plimer, just the name, but I've never met him. I certainly have never debated him. I would be honored to, though. Mm-hmm. So Brad and Julie Moore write in. So Brad, tell Ian I would be honored to debate him. I don't get to I've only been to Australia once, but it might be worth going over there if we could get a debate at the University of Melbourne. It's a long drive. Let me tell you this. I'm in a long drive to Australia. It's a long flight. It'd be a real long drive. But yeah, be glad to go and debate the guy. We could sure get a crowd together for that. I need to go. When I went, I took my whole family. None of them were married at the time, and now I got 3.5 grandkids. That's been a long time since I've been to Australia.
You got another one coming in December.
I know. Can't wait. Keep them coming. I love it. I give them rides. I think I've only changed one diaper and 3.5 grandkids. That's the way it's supposed to be, John. Feed them. Love them. Ride them around on the moped. Send them home. When they start to get a little odoriferous, you say, time to go see mommy. Okay, here we go. I told my wife when we got married, I said, honey, I will change oil in the car every time it needs it, and you change diapers every time they need it. She said, okay, honey, that's a great deal. Actually, I did have to change a few of my three, but praise God, they're all married off now. Okay, here we go. Bryden Kraxberger, K-R-A-X-B-E-R-G-E-R. Bryden, B-R-E-I-D-O-N. We get people from all over the world calling us, Jonathan, and writing us and emailing us. Imagine when we start getting them from somebody's, you know, India and these countries where nobody can pronounce their name. You know, or the old time, the old Mexican names from, you know, 100 years ago, it had seven middle names and stuff like that. You got two middle names, don't you?
Yeah, I got two middle names. My mom stutters, so.
Okay.
No, she doesn't stutter. It's Jonathan Joseph David Sampson, so a very biblical name.
Wow. I don't even have a middle name. Just a letter, E.
It's shorter, you know?
It is. My dad said they couldn't afford it when we were born, you know?
Yeah.
All my brothers got the same thing. Same letter, E.
The birth certificates were a lot smaller back then. They couldn't.
They could charge a nickel a letter, and a nickel was a lot. You could buy a loaf of bread and, you know, a gallon of milk and go to see the movie and a gallon of gas and, you know, a bus ticket downtown. You know, it was rough when I was a kid. Actually, I remember buying gas for 17 cents a gallon for my golf, for my go-kart.
Wow, I remember buying it at 98 cents, and now we're up to 209 or something.
Yeah, well. Can you believe, though, people pay a dollar for a pint of milk, of water?
Mm-hmm.
That's $8 a gallon. $8 a gallon people pay for water.
We just recently had Sandy from Microsoft. He's a Microsoft programmer, come down and visit us for a couple of days. And he's got a hybrid. Apparently it's a gasoline
Honda
plus
hybrid. Yeah, gas. Yeah. I drove the thing. You didn't drive it, did you?
I didn't drive it. No, I heard it start up. Well, I thought I heard it start up. The thing's just kind of like.
That was cool.
Yeah. Sounds like a fan turning on.
It's a 3-cylinder engine in there. He said he came down here from Atlanta getting up to 90 quite a few times, 90 mile an hour.
Mm-hmm.
On the internet, you got to go 90 in Atlanta, though. You get run over.
Yeah.
You're not going 90. That's the minimum speed. And he said he got 50 miles to the gallon with air conditioner on. And he said if you drive it right, you get about 70. Okay, Bryden writes in, I was recently talking with a teacher about anthropology and Christianity. She was saying that a lot of skeletons found had the vertebrae, the backbone, coming out of the back of the skull like a chimp, but would have stood up like a human. Lucy is one of the ones she mentioned. Wasn't, the, obviously, Bryden's first language is not English here. It's a little difficult to read. Let's see. Wasn't there how to answer that? Lucy was a fraud, but what about the other pics she showed me? Your beloved fan, Bryden. Let's see. Bryden, we cover Lucy and all the so-called cavemen on videotape number 2. If you'd like to watch that, you can watch it right online. We have now just seminar part 1 and seminar part 2 available to watch online. If you like those, then buy the rest of the series, because we've put a fortune into those to get them produced for folks, and our people here deserve to get some of the fruits of their labor. So, yeah, there's also, which is the best website for cavemen? Wasn't there a...
I know JackCuazzo.com. He covers many of the Neanderthals, and apparently they have a pretty odd history of people dislocating their jaw bones for displays, which he is, you know, thoroughly smoothing that out a little bit. Other cavemen would be DrDunner.com. Yeah,
we have stuff on there, but also
we got a few.
Go to Paul Abramson's website, creationism.org.
Oh yeah,
he's got a lot of links on there.
Yeah, there's also Revolution Against Evolution. .com. They have a lot of articles.
That's one
on
from England?
I'm not quite sure. I know they have a lot of contributors to their website.
Okay. Good. Here's one from Justin. How can I get all the slides Kent has on his PowerPoint program? Justin, very easy. What do they click on our website to get that?
Just go to the front of the website, drdunner.com, click on shopping. They should be in there underneath the Creation Ministry Startup Package.
There you go. Creation Ministry Startup Package. Oh, break time. We'll be back, folks. Hang in there. Mike, you'll be next, and then Cision Studios, whatever that is. Well, hang in there. We're coming back. Hey, welcome back, folks, to the final segment of the Creation Science Hour. We are live this June 22nd, 2004. If you want to be on the program, go 850-479-DINO, 850-479-3466. Jonathan, I was looking on our website to try to find the chart, the longevity chart. What do I go to on that?
Ministry? Under Science and Articles.
Under Science, Articles. There we go. Science, Articles. There we go. On our website. Physical Science, Miscellaneous. Should it drop down there? What's on there? Medical, Flood, Education.
Okay, yeah. Go to Science, Articles, Creation, Evolution, and then Timelines.
Timeline. Got it. Okay. There's a lot of stuff on this website. Good. There's our longevity chart. Okay. That ties into the next question. which was from Cizion Studios. Hello, I have a question. This does not relate to creation, but I respect your opinion. I was reading in Hebrews, and who was Melchizedek? It says he had no father or mother and no end of days. What does this mean? Good question. Well, here's my Hovind theory on that. Melchizedek, the Bible says Abraham paid tithes to Melchizedek. If you look at our longevity chart, go to the website drdino.com and go to science. And let's see, then go to articles. And under articles, go to, I just got there, Jonathan. It was
Creation and Evolution.
Creation and Evolution. And then you will see the timeline. You'll notice that Abraham, down there fourth from the bottom, could have actually known Shem.
Click on that if you want to get bigger.
Oh, click here for bigger longevity chart. Look at that. Okay. Wow. Okay. Well, who'd have thunk it? It's still working on it. Can't read this little text here quite, though, can you?
Yeah, almost.
You can zoom in, and it's clear?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, I don't need to read that. Okay. Abraham could have easily known Noah and Shem. So it is possible that Melchizedek was another name for Noah or Shem, because they had no father or mother. That might mean no father or mother living. If it was Noah, of course, that would be possible, because everybody died in the flood. And the Ancient of Days, that is just one possibility I've heard. I'm not sure anybody who knows for sure the answer to the question. However, I would start and say that's a possibility, that Melchizedek was Noah or Shem. The other possibility is that it was actually Jesus appeared. There are several times where it seems that Jesus himself appeared on earth before the actual incarnation in Bethlehem. And those are called, what's the term for that? Theophanies, I think. It's been a long time since I studied that in school. A pre-appearance of Christ. I believe it's called Theophanies, something like that. So you might want to check that out. So those are the options I know of. Hope that helps. And if you have any other questions, feel free to AOL Instant Message us at Dr. Dino Live, or to call in 850 or 877. Then it's we pay for the call, instead of you. 877-479-DINO. And go to extension 136. That's also where you would go to leave messages for Jonathan. If you find anything wrong with the website, you find a typo, call him up, leave a message, say, Jonathan, you blew it on page 19, whatever. I do it, almost every day. We find a lot of things on there that need to, but need improved. There's a lot of things on there, too, by the way. Okay, Mike Spurgeon writes in, here, Dr. Hovind, V-O-V-I-N-E. Mike, it's Hovind, like the wind is blowing, V-I-N-D. But that's okay, I get it. My brother had a bulletin board at his house of all the misspellings of his name he got in the mail. He probably had 80 ways to spell six-letter name, Hovind. Bovin, Zovin, Hovinostein, and hilarious, some of the things in it. Oh, let's see. Mike writes in, Dr. Hovind, I just wanted you to know what an impact your evangelism has made on my life. You saved me by his grace. October 18th, 1993 at 2:24 p.m. Just like everybody else, I had been brainwashed in humanism. I soon found that all my friends turned quickly to be my enemies. Mike, been there, done that. I remember the day, my sophomore year in high school, when I walked into the cafeteria for breakfast, like I normally did, sat down with all the guys I normally sat down with, and announced, hey guys, yesterday I became a Christian. I gave my heart to the Lord. Within 30 seconds, the table was cleared. They were gone. They just, one by one, left. I thought, what did I say? Do I have the plague? I mean, what happened here, guys? My longtime friends, just like that, turned against me. It is such a lonely feeling. But, you know, I found out that over the next year, God brought me some just amazing lifetime friends that really were friends for the right reason. It wasn't a common love of sin or a common hatred for God that bound us together. It was amazing. And now I have friends literally all over the planet that I could go to. I could walk up to probably thousands of people's houses and say, I need a meal and a place to stay. And I would have it just like that. So God has given me some amazing friends around the world. So Mike, I understand about your friends quickly turn to your enemies. Mike goes on to say, They threw everything but the kitchen sink at me when it came to God's Word. They thought I was nuts believing what I was reading. In 1998, a Christian brother asked me to see this guy who talks about dinosaurs at a church he attended. I went and heard your seminar on what's in the textbooks. After picking my jaw up from the ground, I dedicated my life to gain every bit of knowledge possible for my Lord Jesus. I downloaded all of your information, and while I run my lathe at work, I spent 8 hours a day listening to your seminars. I almost got the whole thing memorized. My wife is about to shoot me. Amazing what you can do when you set your heart to it. God bless you and your team and all that you do. Your friend in Ohio, Mike Spurgeon. Awesome, Mike. That's tremendous. We've got to add that testimony to our pile. We have so many. One more we can add to the web here. Our guess is, from the numbers and letters and calls and emails we get, probably 40 to 50,000 people have trusted the Lord because of our ministry. And plus, who knows how many thousands have been strengthened in their faith to go out and get somebody saved. That's the whole goal. Okay, folks, if you want to call in, there are 6 minutes left. Call quickly, 850-479-3466, extension 136, or AOL Instant Messages at Dr. Dino Live. And if some of you skeptics or anti-Hovind website authors are out there, hey, call in. We'd love to take your question. If you don't call or don't email, we can only assume you don't really want an answer to your question. And those critics out there with the 1,000 anti-Hovind websites apparently don't really want an answer.
Hear that, or they're scared of the answer. You know, they know there's an answer. Everybody in the world knows God exists unless their conscience is seared. But some people just don't want to hear that.
Yeah, good point. Okay, Melissa Basilio says, I'm a believer in creation science, but have a quick question about a fact you used in one of your seminars. You said the earth is shrinking and that billions of years ago the sun would be so huge the earth would have burned up. Oh, wait a minute. I never said the earth is shrinking. I don't recall ever saying that. No, the sun is shrinking. The earth is not. Okay. Okay. It goes on here. Melissa goes on to say, wouldn't the earth's orbit around the sun have changed with the sun's changing mass? Okay. There she corrected it. Must be talking about the sun. And its gravitational pull would have expanded and the earth would have fallen further outward. I don't think it would have ever touched. What's your response to this? Jonathan, she's saying as the earth burned up, as the sun burned up and shrank, the earth would have been pulled in. So it would have always stayed the right distance.
I don't think so.
The opposite would happen. As the sun burns up, it's losing mass. So now the gravitational pull becomes weaker,
mm-hmm.
and the earth drifts off.
So the bigger the sun is, the closer we would come to it.
Not only would we be closer just because the sun is bigger, we'd be closer because the sun is more massive.
Mm-hmm.
There'd be two problems there. So, Melissa, I'm sorry, I have to disagree. I don't think it's a problem. I think it is a problem for those who believe the Earth-Sun system is billions of years old. I'm not exactly sure at what point it would make a problem, but at some time in the past, it would make a problem for those who teach billions of years.
Many atheists and evolutionists, to counter this claim, they say, oh, well, the size is oscillating. You know, it's not always a constant. You can't just watch it for, you know, 250 years, 2,000 years, whatever, and say, aha, this is a constant. But, you know, if they would apply the same logic to radioactive dating methods, you know, they watch these things for 30 minutes and say, oh, well, this is a constant and we know it.
Yeah.
Of course, when it's not convenient, they would bite their own toe off to get out of it.
Yep.
So.
Okay, we got time for a couple more here. Eric Boomer Bloomgren. If this might be the boomer that I know that visited here that was in the military and was a recruiter. Let me see here. Kent, do you remember me? Hope so. You've been a great and positive influence on my life. I'll be retiring from the Navy. Yep, this is Boomer. I remember Boomer. And Boomer, thank you for writing in. Good to hear from you. He says, you've been a great and positive impact on my life. I'll be retiring from the Navy July 15th in Ardmore, Oklahoma. If you're in the area for some crazy reason, please come by and even guest speak. I'm going to see Mr. Thomas Sharp every evening this week. He spoke well of you tonight after his session. Lori and I will be leading the VBS this year at Milo Baptist around the end of July, and it is themed on my second favorite topic on the planet, God's creation. Do you have any advice? God bless you, brother. You're one of my heroes. I'll be praying for your strength as often as I think of it. Often, not often enough, I fear. Keep the faith, brother. Eric Boomer from Oklahoma. Let's see, Eric, you're going to speak on creation to a VBS. We have a VBS package put together here that you can order, which has all kinds of stuff. You go to our website. Is that just on VBS, Jonathan? Is that how they get it? VBS? Shopping cart. Okay. Go to drandrew.com and go to the shopping cart and type in VBS. We've had some folks put together a really good curriculum here on using dinosaurs to teach creation. It includes a video, a book, all kinds of stuff to get your own VBS. You might want to glean some good ideas from that. Hopefully, that would be something there you could use. It's based on the five letters D-I-N-O-S, something for each day. I use a lot of visuals when I speak to kids, Eric. You can see in any of my seminars, I have a whole suitcase full of dinosaurs and posters and charts and books. And use object lessons. Jesus did that continually. He said, consider the lilies, you know, consider the sparrows. He's always using object lessons. And I think that sometimes preachers miss that vital point in their preaching. They think they get up and talk and everybody should listen and understand. It's not the way people learn, okay? You learn mostly through your eyes, a little bit through your ears, but I think it's 80% through the eyes and 15% through the ears and 5% through other senses. So as far as retention, if you can see it and hear it, you're going to retain much more, which is one of the other reasons why I use so many visuals in my seminar. Not only is that my cue or prompt of what to say, that is a visual, you know, all the PowerPoint slides, a visual that will keep everybody's attention and make them learn more. Okay, we're going to hurry, try to get another one in here. Logan Venter says, about the email dated June 1st that asks where all fossils have gone, Marvin, what do you think oil comes from? Oil comes from dead organisms that have been compressed to extremities. The experts would have you believe that this process takes millions of years, that they've created oil in the laboratory in no more than 5 minutes. They've even made a diamond, which is also compressed carbon. When the flood came 4,400 years ago, all those bodies would have been covered in rock and soil. Could you imagine having all that on top of you? I should think that the pressure was enough for those bodies to be turned to oil. Thank you for your interesting point. Well, true. Ask anybody that's ever been buried alive, or like the guys that get stuck in a trench. You know, it caves in on them. All it traps is their legs. And they just, you can't pull them out. I mean, the weight, figure a gallon, a cubic foot of water weighs about 62 pounds. A cubic foot of rock can weigh much more than that. I mean, it depends what kind of rock, of course, but it might weigh 5 to 10 times as much, depending on, you know, 11 times if it's a galena, I believe. But so let's just pick a number and say 5 times as much. So a cubic foot of rock would weigh 300 pounds. Stack 1,000 of those on top of you, and you have 300,000 pounds of pressure per square foot. That's just being buried under 1,000 feet. You know, they drill down 3 to 5 to 10,000 feet to get oil. I think in East Texas, when I lived there, the average depth was about 3,000 feet is where the oil was found. Well, if those creatures were buried 3,000 feet down, we're talking a whole lot of weight, 900,000 pounds per square foot. So, yeah, that would easily squeeze them. The heat produced would convert them to oil. Heat and pressure is all it takes, an organic material. So, Logan, tell your friend Marvin, whoever was writing this here, Marvin and Logan, both of you, the oil, I think, had to be formed because of the flood in the days of Noah. And certainly not millions of years ago. Oh, Jonathan, we might get another one in here. I can't believe they're still going. Okay. John Mantagna. John, no, break time. Sorry, John. We'll see you tomorrow. Join us, folks, and tell your friends to tune into the program. We'd love to have them on here with us. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.